You're listening to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show, broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio on 92.7 CFFF FM in Peterborough, Canada.
Hey kids!
I'm Batman.
Look, up in the sky! It's a bird!
It's a plane!
It's Dance Off, bro! Me and you!
Hello and welcome to Hey Kids Comics. I'm your host, Dan Collins.
Hey there, this is Martin Bruda.
Chris Gill.
Hi, I'm Sam Tweedle. I could talk about Archie forever.
The biggest bane to my existence right now is Shield number 9.
They know that I would have put it under my shirt and ran off.
What are you talking about? I haven't seen any Action Comics number 1.
Gwenpool, I mean Spider-Gwen, the whole heat and stuff, this is going to be worth a few bucks. And nobody wanted it.
Yes, Dan, the Killing Joke does need to be R-rated.
I kind of like punching the walls of reality as a way to bring a character back because nobody knows what we're talking about right now.
Dark Knight Strikes Back was one of the biggest piles of dung ever, and it was what, $10 an issue?
We need to shame Sam. He is not here because he's gone to the Gem and the Holograms movie.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another Friday night Hey Kids Comics here on Trent Radio. Martin Bruda speaking in the studio. I've got
Dan Collins.
And hi, this is Sam Tweedle. And I always would like to say wish a happy birthday to Warwick Davies. Today is Warwick Davies' birthday.
There you go.
Did you know that every February 3rd, if Warwick Davies goes outside and sees a shadow, it's only 6 more weeks till spring?
Ba-dum-bum.
It's true.
Is he in comic books?
What?
Warwick Davies.
He's Wicked Ewok.
And Willow. We're not a Star Wars show. We're not a Willow show.
But that's okay because it's all geek culture, my friend. It's all geek culture. I'm sure. One time I met Warwick Davies and briefly. Okay, I encountered him. Well, I don't want to say I meet him. It's different. But one time I read this story, something about like he was like this little kid who liked Star Wars. He was like a small little person kid who liked Star Wars. And they were doing auditions, they just needed a bunch of little people. And his grandmother brought him down to the set, and they dressed him up like an Ewok. But what it was Kenny Baker was originally supposed to be Wicked the Ewok, but he got food poisoning. And they needed somebody, and they were just like, "You, kid!" Put him in the costume, and that's how he got going. But imagine being like a 9-year-old Star Wars fan, and all of a sudden to be hanging out with Carrie Fisher
but if he's a 9-year-old Star Wars fan, that means Star Wars came out when he was 3.
Okay, maybe he wasn't 9. I don't know how old he was. He was a little kid.
Okay, but
I know he's 57 today.
He's got to be older.
No, he's 47.
Oh, he's not 47. He's older.
47.
Than
no, I don't think he's older than you. Somebody look it up. I think he's 47 today.
I'm 47. No, he can't be 47.
No, I think he's 47.
No.
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 How old is Warwick Davies? You got a phone. I'm arguing with Marty.
I have a small data plan.
All right. I'll look it up. You guys talk about comics or something.
Dan, comic books.
Yeah.
They exist. They're cool.
Should we talk? Like, are we going to talk about that stuff?
Sure.
Yeah.
Because that stuff is amazing.
That stuff is really cool.
Let's talk about this.
So, before we get into it, though, I would just like to point out that Warwick Davies is 47 years old.
How is that possible?
Because he's younger than you.
He's a year younger than I am.
Yeah. Yeah, he's 47. So, how old would he have been when he was in Star Wars?
He was in Return of the Jedi.
Like 84?
83.
83.
So, he was filming it in 82.
Yeah. So, how old would he have been?
He would have been 12.
12. So he's 12 years old. He's a 12-year-old kid, and all of a sudden he's in Star Wars. That would have been amazing. That would have been so amazing. He said that Mark Hamill gave him a bunch of, like, Kenner action figures, and he still has them.
There you go.
Imagine if, like, Luke Skywalker shows up and says, "Hey, kid, you want some?"
But are they mint in package?
Oh, no. Probably not.
Heck, I have one Star Wars figure left over, because I was 8 when Star Wars came out.
Yeah.
So the second Star Wars hit, everything else went under the bed. The Mego action figures went under the bed. The Hot Wheels went under the bed. The Big Jim under the bed. And it was all Star Wars for me. I want Star Wars underoos. I want Star Wars sheets. I want Star Wars curtains. Mom, I want my Star Wars action figures. And Mom, Sears has a Cantina Creature playset. And I want that. And we used to go to Consumers Distributing. So out of all that Star Wars stuff, I must have had 50-some-odd figures.
Me too. I had tons.
A few vehicles. Because that's the one thing. Vehicles were more expensive. So I only got vehicles for birthday and Christmas. But action figures, for some reason, they came. I got those. I got pretty spoiled for that. So the only one I have left is my Boba Fett, my original mail-away Boba Fett.
You know what's funny is I wasn't allowed to, I didn't have vehicles or bases. Like, I was able to get the figures, but Mom was like, Mom, I want, like, a Star Wars base, and she'd give me a box. Here's a box. Draw a base on it.
Yeah.
And I would. I would cut the windows and draw it all up. I want a Star Wars car. Here's a box.
Draw some wheels on it.
Draw some wheels on it. But you know what? For whatever reason, as a kid, I was satisfied with that. And that's what I did.
Well, we used to do that with Hot Wheels. We'd make our own little cityscapes. Dad would throw down a 4x8 piece of paneling, flip it over, and we'd go with markers and create our own little cities and streets and stuff. Star Wars.
Anyways, let's go back to your comics there.
Well, Star Wars.
Well, yeah, well, let's talk.
I think we should talk about Star Wars for an hour. No, I could talk about.
Star Wars for
Star Wars.
I could do it.
Brought to you by the Disney Corporation.
So recently, I was perusing the web, and I don't know about you, but I signed up for the Nelvana Kickstarter when it came out.
I did, yeah.
Wave Go,
yeah.
And that was Hope Nicholson and Rachel Ritchie. They took a whole bunch of
40s.
So it was early 40s Canadian comics featuring a character called Nelvana. Scanned them, cleaned them up, made a hardcover volume. And then they started doing some other ones. There was Johnny Canuck from Rachel Ritchie. We're still waiting for the...
Brock Windsor?
Brock Windsor was from Hope, right?
Okay.
That's right. So they split up. Hope did Brock Windsor, another collection of comics featuring the character Brock Windsor, obviously. And Rachel did the Johnny Canuck.
Johnny Canuck.
And she's Mr. The Monster.
And we're waiting for Mr. Monster, but Rachel got pregnant and had a baby, which, you know, hey, let's put priorities in order here.
Sure. Having
comics are the priority.
Yeah, exactly. Being a new mom, that's kind of important.
Yep.
So that project's a little bit on the delayed side. So I was just kind of perusing, looking to see if there's any statuses, what's going on and stuff like this. And I came across Hope's website. And she has these two reprint comics. I guess these were comic books that there wasn't enough, like Dan and I were talking about just before the show, there wasn't enough to make a collected volume. So she just kind of gathered up all the polka dot pirate stories into one comic book sized reprint. And then she also reprinted WoW Comics number one.
Cool.
But Dan had a really good point.
I forget it.
Oh, why didn't they just put both of these collected comics into a hardcover?
And maybe some more.
And just a few more pieces. Like, I don't know whether... I don't know the timeline, because I didn't follow this. Maybe one's like a year old and one's a year after that. But so for, I think it was like $10 a piece, these really cool...
Those are great.
Like, WoW Comics number one is a one-to-one reprint. So everything that was in the other one is in
even
this
one. Even
the
advertisements.
So what
characters
was
amazing
in WoW Comics number one?
Dart Darling.
Dart Daring?
Daring or Darling? Daring. Yes, it's Daring.
And there's also a another one. As I was flipping through, I saw it features Wiz Wallace. And what's funny is that Wiz Wallace and the Polka Dot Pirate there are both characters that are going to be in the Little Aurora Man and Friends comic book.
Cool.
There you
that
go.
I've been writing.
Mm. Any major Major Domo and JoJo?
No Major Domo and JoJo.
See, that's what I want. There was only something like 4 Major Domo stories, so it's not really enough for a hardcover.
No, and that's why I think...
Boy, would I love to see them reprint those Major Domo stories.
Like, that's the exact same thing with this Polka Dot Pirate. There wasn't enough of her stories for an entire thing, so they just kind of put it together in a comic book.
Maybe Tony has a copy of the original for you.
What's I would love to buy some of those off Hope. What's their website?
I'd have to take a look. If you do a search for Hope Nicholson, you'll find her site.
Okay.
And just the store and away it goes. I mean, you can plunder down the Google hole and you'll find these no problem.
I think we're on...
I can put links on the website.
I think we're on Instagram together.
But
I don't know if she follows me. I think I'm following her or something.
Since our audience is audio and not visual, we'll just tell you that they look amazing.
Yeah,
they look
cool. I'd like to get those, actually.
They're great color reproduction.
Yeah.
And nice, like the WoW Comics is really slick and stuff like that. So it's fun. I know that they also did a black and white reprint of Triumph Comics number one and Dime Comics number one. I have both of those.
I have one of those.
I have both of those that I picked up at comic shows.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not as slick as this.
No, those are nice.
And then, of course, there's the 70s reprint that I had a lead on, but that lead evaporated.
Mm.
Which reprint is that?
I can't remember exactly which one they reprinted, but I think it was like a Dime Comics.
Yeah.
Mm. But that one would have been cool too. Mm-hmm. But same, just a black and white reprint.
Cool. Cool.
Almost makes you want to like look and see if there's any other public domain Canadian characters that nobody's re-grabbed and do a little small pressing ourselves.
Yeah.
If only somebody had like a computer shop with like 6 laser printers and color binder.
Yeah, I don't know. Who would have one of those?
And if only we knew somebody who had lots of Golden Age comics.
Yeah, I don't know if they'd be willing to let us scan though.
Yeah.
That's, you know, it'd be interesting to like see what the actual process is, because you know, like WoW Comics, scanning that would frighten me.
Well, I've already done some restorations and stuff, so I know the process involved, like removing the old color.
You did the restoration of the slipcovers for the Great Canadian comic books hardcovers.
Yeah, that's a project I'm still working on. I've got. So anybody who doesn't remember, John Bell produced a hardcover, large format book all about Canadian comics. Oh, gosh.
Back in the 70s.
And, of course, the slipcover, it's never survived. It's damaged all to heck.
Mine's
so
not
I
bad.
Managed to scan 3 or 4 different versions, piece together the nicest pieces, clean it up, digitally do it. And, of course, watermark it, because I'm not into piracy and forgery, so it's watermarked in quite a few spots where... You know, I like digitally recreated by blah, blah, blah. And so there's no way that anyone's going to mistake this for an original. And then get some printed out and see if people are interested. But, you know, that's a copyright issue as well. Like, I'm sure John Bell still owns the copyright for that book. So I'm not about to, like, churn out covers and flood the market with reproduction covers, even if they are marked properly without some permission and stuff. So, so yeah, I've got that going. So it should be fun. But it's a big piece of paper, too, so that'd have to be professionally printed.
Sure.
I think the biggest photo laser printer I've got is 11 by 17. So that wouldn't work out too well. But, yeah, it's fun. It's fun. Yeah, so no word on Mr. Monster.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
no idea
I'm sure it's a matter of time. I'd like to get a copy of that. Like, I'm looking forward to it. I didn't sign up for that Kickstarter, but I missed it. I don't know why, but somehow it missed my radar. Yeah. Maybe I wasn't really in a place or time at that point that where I could but starting about Kickstarters, next week is the debut PDF of Die Kitty Die Hollywood or Bust #1.
There you go.
Is being released, according to Dan and Fernando. They announced that. Did anybody go online this week and see Fernando's mock-up cover of it? I think it's a commission he's doing, but it's a Die Kitty Die mock-up cover, which is a play on the original Swamp Thing cover by Bernie Wrightson.
Yeah, he's not quite finished it, but what he's got done is amazing.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
That looks brilliant.
Yeah.
I guess it's a commission. It's not going to actually be published, but boy, is it beautiful.
Well, you know what's going to happen is as soon as somebody sees that, they're just going to ask him for another one and another one and another one. And hopefully he'll eventually get the hint and just mass produce a print for everybody.
I'm just crazy about it. I was chatting with Fernando online last night. Actually, he really liked my take on the CW's Peanuts. So,
oh my goodness, that was hilarious.
Can I talk about that or?
Yeah, just be gentle.
Don't
offend our readership.
No, I won't. So, anyways, this is the last time I talk about the subject. I promise this is it.
This is Sam continuing his Riverdale rant.
Yes. So,
which I liked, but we won't get into.
So, anyways, I got a lot of emails from people who don't listen to the show and don't read my Facebook regularly, that asked me what I thought of Riverdale after it premiered, and I'm just like, I got a little tired of it. So, anyways, I decided to write.
You testy and opinionated? Yeah, never,
never.
Come on.
So, anyway, I decided to basically parody. What was going on. And Dan, did you read it last night?
I did.
Yeah. So anyways, this is so we've done what we've done with Archie. I'm thinking, what if the CW keeps going? So I decided to actually write a pitch for a CW Peanuts. Of course, we all know the Peanuts gang, Charlie Brown and Snoopy and everything. So I'm just going to read this to you. So this is my pitch. And so I write, it's like, coming to the CW this summer from the mind of Roberto, what's his name, Aguirre Sacasa? He's the guy who did Riverdale. He also does Afterlife for Archie. Anyways, it's the Peanuts gang.
that you grew up loving reimagined for a new generation. When Shermie is found dead on the pitcher's mound, Charlie Brown becomes obsessed with finding the true killer of his obscure friend that barely anybody remembers. Could it be his tormentor Lucy Van Pelt, who is bitter over the recent discovery that her beloved Schroeder is in a secret gay relationship with Franklin? Meanwhile, Peppermint Patty is concerned because Marcy won't stop cutting herself. Things become more convoluted and edgy when Linus's soul is being taken over by the dark entity from beyond the grave. Could the Great Pumpkin be taking him over? And when Sally starts to dig deep into the family archives for clues, she begins to find family secrets so horrible that it rocks the foundation of everything we've ever believed to known about the Brown family when she discovers that her original last name was actually Braun and that her great-grandmother's name was Ava. Could that mean they are descendants of love children of the Third Reich? All of this, and Snoopy is now a cat. Because, well, that's edgy and weird and unnecessary. It's the reboot that nobody wanted, but everybody is going to love because it's nothing like the comics. Starring Shia LaBeouf as Charlie Brown, Ariana Grande as Lucy, and Forest Whitaker as Woodstock. Stay tuned for It's Your Dark and Gritty CW Reboot, Charlie Brown. It's going to be the best Charlie Brown ever.
I like how you recite the way you write. The fact that you didn't breathe at all, and the fact that when you wrote that, you didn't put a single paragraph break in it. It was just this big wall of text that just overwhelmed everybody.
But you know
what? That is very funny, though.
It is.
Your write-up is
But it was funny. Fernando Ruiz did say something to me, and he said that he noticed that everybody who liked it, their comment was, I liked it because it was nothing like the comics.
Well, I don't think... My kids read Archie.
Yeah.
They read the classic Archie. They're reading the current Archie. Yeah. But they're tweens,
yeah.
Right? Verging on teenagerhood. Huh. So they're into all that CW drama stuff. Yeah. Like you and me, I'm watching Arrow and I'm like, oh my gosh, Ollie and Felicity again. And Felicity and Ollie. And we were just talking about this in the lobby. Oh, another love triangle. Oh, can we just shoot somebody with an arrow? But the girls, my kids love this kind of stuff.
Maybe the arrow in the title is Cupid's arrow.
Yeah, exactly. So they watched Riverdale, and it's not as bad as you made it sound. There's no cutting. There's no, like, yes, Archie's in a relationship with his teacher, but it's like a young, super young teacher. Like, she looks younger than some of the kids.
Yeah, but Miss Grundy, that's not Miss Grundy.
That doesn't matter.
It matters to
me.
It
doesn't matter because Gotham, nobody in Gotham is who they are in the comics.
But you know what?
Walking Dead.
As I said,
Walking Dead. Nobody's the same.
But you know what? It's the last time I'm going to talk about Riverdale.
Book adaptations aren't the same.
I'm not going to talk about Riverdale anymore.
Okay, well, I watched it, so do you want to talk about it for a minute, Marty?
What did you think?
Well, I thought it was incredibly boring.
That's what I...
I like... The only thing that would keep me interested was the actual murder mystery, because I don't care about the characters.
Was it funny?
No.
No, it's not humorous.
Oh my God, I can't imagine. Archie not being funny? Isn't that what Archie's supposed to be funny?
No. Archie's killing zombies. Archie's beating up Sharknado.
Fighting the Punisher.
Archie's dying. He's getting married. Where does this Archie funny thing come from?
I don't know. Maybe I thought Archie should be funny.
Is this 1970?
Know. It should be.
Is Superman still drawn by Kurt Swan?
But let's talk about new reboots. Okay, so...
Well, wait a sec. Are we talking about Riverdale or new reboots?
No, we're going to talk about a different reboot.
I think we should talk about
Riverdale.
Okay,
you guys talk about Riverdale.
Because you asked us what we thought about it.
Yes, I did. And then all of a sudden I'm like, I don't care. I don't care.
Wait, your opinion. No.
And you know what? I did that to you the other day in the car, so I told you I'd stop doing that crap. There you go. So I'm sorry.
I'm like Dan in the fact that it was okay. Mm-hmm. It was interesting enough that I could sit there and watch it with the girls, but it's not a TV show I would look for myself.
Okay.
You know, because it is Degrassi Junior High.
Yeah.
But see, I am a Degrassi Junior High fan.
Yeah, but it's a bit
different.
But you have,
you have a vested interest in the Archie world.
Okay.
Degrassi was the wrong example. I'm thinking things like Gossip Girl and some of those other CW type. Yeah. Like the same thing happened to Smallville. It became very relationship oriented.
I remember really liking Smallville when... Who was the guy who was doing... The guy who wrote... Jeff Loeb was the executive producer at the first few seasons. Mm-hmm. And it was really good. And then the moment Loeb left...
It got a little weird.
And then all of a sudden it became the Green Arrow show featuring Superman.
Yeah.
And then it was just... They were like, what crazy character can we throw in this week? And I never saw the last few seasons. I went from being one of my favorite shows on TV to... I couldn't stand watching it.
See, I think that if I really do, because the type of stuff that you like, the type of comics you like and stuff, if Riverdale was called something else with the exact same actors, same script, everything's the same, but all the names were different, you'd like the show.
I probably would. But you know, though, we'll tell you this, is that we were talking about this the other day, and I think the problem with me is, see, I found a reboot that I'm really excited about, and I realize that my problem is that it's because it is a franchise that I'm so invested in that I love. So if I see it being manipulated in a way that I think is too far away from the original concept, I'm going to get kind of upset. Because we were talking about the new Snagglepuss reboot.
Oh, my goodness.
Which I am so excited about. I think it is so out there and goofy and crazy. But you know what?
And there's a Snagglepuss loyalist somewhere out there.
Somewhere out there.
Who's turning around in his grave.
I know. There's probably some Hanna-Barbera character fans that are just beating their heads off a wall going, no, this cannot be a thing. I hate it. And meanwhile, we've talked about the Hanna-Barbera stuff, which is another stuff I've rejected.
Give the elevator pitch on what the new
Snagglepuss is. Yeah, because I don't know about this.
Okay, you know who Snagglepuss is. He's the pink mountain lion that's like, and it's like, it's great, it's fantastic, it's fabulous even, you know. And okay, so they are now, they're doing a Snagglepuss. They're doing a short story at the end of the Suicide Squad Banana Splits annual.
Oh my goodness, which is just driving me nuts to
which,
that's a sentence I never thought I would hear.
So yeah, right. DC Comics is coming out with a bunch of weird annuals where they're combining their characters with some of the Hanna-Barbera characters.
And some of them are kind of like Space Ghost and Green Arrow. I mean, Green Lantern makes sense to me.
Well,
and
why not?
Flintstones and Booster Gold. But they are doing, Banana Splits and Suicide Squad, which I thought was weird. And I wasn't going to buy it, but then I found out about this. Like, it's like a 10-page Snagglepuss backup story that's going to be launched into it's like, I don't know if it's an ongoing or a mini or something later on in the summer.
I think it's a throw this balloon up in the air and see if
and it I think it's
sticks.
Written by the same guy that's doing the Flintstones one right now. And everybody knows, I've already basically said that I don't care about Scooby Apocalypse and the Flintstones, and I don't want to read a Flintstones that looks like John Goodman. I don't want to read that. But then I found out about Snagglepuss. So this is the pitch. Snagglepuss is now a gay, gothic playwright from the 1950s. It's so messed up, but at the same time, I think it's kind of awesome.
There was a lot of silence there because both Dan and I are just like, no. There's no way you're getting $3.99 out of me for that.
I'm fully in. I'm
no
all the way.
Way.
I just, and to me, it's because it's so bizarre.
Tell me he's like the poet laureate of some Mississippi university or something.
I don't
like
know.
That too.
To me,
that's the only thing that it comes to mind.
And then you found a page, and it's him hanging out in a park outside the White House talking to Augie Doggie.
Oh gosh.
I read that, and so I was so it just shows how much of a hypocrite I am, and I'm the first to say it. Because I'm getting all excited. And I'm telling you, oh my God, it's so weird. It's so crazy. And I say this to Marty. I actually said this. I said, you know what? All reboots should just be crazy and off the wall like this. And then I thought about it for a second. I was like, wait.
I hate it when they're off the wall and crazy like this.
And that's the thing, is because I have no investment in those Hanna-Barbera characters. I think they're cool. I think they're interesting. But like I know Paul Dini loves that stuff because I've been to his home. I've seen all his Hanna-Barbera collection in his office. He loves that stuff, and I'd be interested to know what a guy like him thinks about
given it. What he thought of how Harley Quinn, his creation, was transformed and gritty-eyed.
I think he was crazy about that.
Yeah, exactly. So I can't imagine he's going to be particularly crazy.
He was supportive.
Well, yeah, because he wants to work.
Yeah.
You know, there's some people out there that will open up their yaps on the internet and then wonder why they're now struggling for a job. Yeah. I think Paul's a little smarter than that, so he's probably got some decent opinions on his own, but he's just keeping them to himself.
Sure, sure. But I would be curious to know what he thinks of it. And, I mean, if there's that one guy who should be writing some of those Hanna-Barbera books, it's Paul Dini, because his knowledge of Hanna-Barbera is
Yeah, but that's
really
got nothing
intense.
To do with it. They're not. They're not
if
writing.
They're doing weird and wacky reboots. What is it? We might as well do it.
Well, I mean, I've already pitched my peanuts idea.
True.
Right? You know, I have another really crazy idea, too.
Oh, gosh.
All right.
Does it involve Jason's Quest?
No. No, it doesn't involve Jason's Quest. It actually doesn't involve comics, but I was thinking today. I was listening to a Starland Vocal Band album.
Who?
Yeah, exactly. They were a one-hit wonder from the 70s. They did Afternoon Delight, and I was thinking, wouldn't it be so funny? But it wouldn't. It would be a disaster if somebody made, you know those Broadway shows where they take all the songs from one artist and they make a whole show on it, like Mamma Mia or... What was the...
Don't they have to have, like, a bunch of songs?
Yeah, I know. Isn't it hilarious?
So they're just going to do the whole play, one song.
What if they did all songs based on the music of Starland Vocal Band?
Which is one song.
Well, they had more songs, but they're only one song anybody knew. I guess they could sing that song about seven times.
Jeez Louise.
Each verse is another act.
That's almost as bad as the live-action Superman, the live-action Spider-Man plays that didn't happen very well.
I used to... Yeah... I don't know. I just think that's such a funny idea. It would be terrible. It would be a total disaster. It would be like the worst Broadway show ever. But I don't know why I find it really funny.
Oh, well.
I was listening to their album. I bought their album this week. I was listening to it. I was like, oh, this would be like the funniest. We could just call it like Afternoon Delight. That'd be the name of the show. It'd be great. Anyways, let's keep talking about comics.
Well, remember last week, the week before, I said if anybody knows any Kickstarters, let us know.
Yeah,
they're coming out of the woodwork now.
Sweet. Oh, yeah, that's cool.
There's Kickstarters everywhere. So, great. I mean, the one Kickstarter that I wanted to talk about is The North Shield from William Byrne. This is his second attempt at a Kickstarter. He tried once and didn't fund, so now he's trying again. He wants roughly $6,000. He's got $2,000 so far, 27 days to go. So this is a Canadian comic book. William Byrne did a few other Canadian comics self-published that he's kind of, I don't want to disparage a fellow, but he's kind of like the Richard Cumley that never hit on that hot property that people grabbed onto.
Okay.
So he's done some comics. One was Max P.I., which was really funny as heck. And he's trying a superhero comic now. So it looks really good. I think it looks pretty great.
I've pledged.
Yeah, you've pledged, I've pledged. So North Shield is the name if you wanted to Google search that on Kickstarter. I'm sure William would appreciate the support. He's got Marvin Law. People know Marvin Law from the Toronto comic book community. He's a pretty decent enough artist. Mm-hmm. He's you don't want to disparage anybody, but he's not exactly my favorite art style.
So he's no Neil Adams.
He's no Neil Adams. Exactly.
Yeah.
But he's better than Kurt Swan.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I would put a poster from Marvin Law on my wall before I put a Kurt Swan poster on my wall any day of the week.
Yeah, I find the fact that Kurt Swan offends you so much so funny. I mean, I've never liked Kurt Swan. I've never disliked Kurt Swan.
I've been reading comics since the early 70s. Yeah. So that was, you know, like... My very first exposure to Batman was a bunch of comic books that somebody gave somebody. I don't remember the details. I always make the story up that it was an uncle, but it wasn't. It was somebody else. And the first Batman comics I read were the Neil Adams, Denny O'Neil stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Irv Novick and those guys. So I'm looking at this hyper-realistic image from Neil Adams. And then right beside it is the 1940s, 50s style Superman, where Superman's in rainbow-colored costumes, and he's got an electrode on his head that all of a sudden made him forget that he's Superman, and just ridiculous 50s stories, when right beside it you get these more realistic stories. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to use the word realistic. They were just more involved.
Yeah.
Right? So cool. I always thought that Superman lagged behind. So I hated Superman as a kid.
I get it. Some of the most earliest...
And he drew it for decades!
Some of the earliest comics I bought, they were drawn by George Perez.
Like, how did Norm Breyfogle not have a longer career drawing Batman than he did versus Kurt Swan drawing Superman?
I remember the early Just Leaps I was buying that I really influenced... That really influenced me.
Blackmail material. There's no way.
That were influenced me were drawn by George Perez. There was a time where George Perez was writing Justice League... Or drawing Justice League, and those were the earliest ones I had. So I really got into comics through George Perez's work. And then I was, you got some of that Carmine Infantino stuff.
Ugh.
And I couldn't stand it. But you know what's funny is I've become, and when I was reading that Flash book we were talking, I actually started to really appreciate Infantino's work. I wouldn't say I'm a big fan of it,
No.
but I became...
tolerant?
No.
Not even tolerant. I thought it was very stylized. I thought it was very beautiful in its own weird way.
Nope.
Like, it's just different.
Nope.
It's just different, you know?
I think Marty disagrees.
This is me, like, being petulant. No.
Oh, is this Marty doing an impersonation of me?
No. Martin can be petulant on his own. He doesn't need to mimic Sam to be petulant.
I can't
stand Carmine Infantino either.
I'm trying to think of an artist that I just flat out don't like.
Carmine Infantino.
There was one guy back in the 80s and 70s, and I can't think what his name is. He's been passed away for quite a while. Don Heck.
How can you not like Don Heck?
I love Don Heck.
Okay.
But as a kid, I didn't like him because I thought he made everybody look Asian.
Well, the thing with Don Heck is he's, again, one of these older artists drawing in an older style when the new stuff was coming.
But because he was drawing...
He did Justice League for a while.
He did, yeah. And then he did World's Finest.
I have a Justice League page, like an original 11x17 Don Heck page.
So, because I remember he was doing World's Finest, and I remember getting these World's Finest books, and like Superman looked Asian. It wasn't even new Superman. It was just like Don Heck made everybody look Asian. And I was just like, what's wrong with... Why does everybody look like Asian? And I remember I used to have this thing, but now I look at... Again, it's like Infantino. I look at Heck's work and I just love it. In fact, I have a Zatanna tattoo, right? I almost got a Don Heck Zatanna tattooed on me.
There you go.
Because he drew her first solo story in The Flash.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost got the splash page tattooed on me at one point, and then I changed my mind and got a different one. But so the fact that I would almost get a Don Heck image tattooed on my body forever shows you I have appreciation for him. But I remember as a kid not liking him.
Like, just as an example of how much I hate Kurt Swan and Carmine Infantino, I didn't read a single Barry Allen Flash comic my entire growing up life. Not once.
It's too bad. They're good.
Not till you gave me that trade paperback.
And wasn't it good?
The story was good. The art drove me nuts the entire time. And the fact that it was black and white just made it even worse.
Oh, no. I love the story. But I got... used to it, and I found it beautiful. If I have a good story, I can get used to the art. A great example A great example of that is I used to work at Another World's Comics, and Ted one time gave me a bunch of hate comics by Peter Baggy. And I don't know if you guys know Peter Baggy's work. Everybody look up Peter Baggy.
Just as a side note,
sure.
He's going to be either at Toronto Comic Con or Fan Expo. I can't remember which.
Really?
Yeah, Kevin Boyd put it down.
I
can't remember which one.
Now, I'm definitely going to be going one or the other if Peter Baggy's going to be there, because I've always wanted to meet him. He's one of
I feel like it's Fan Expo.
Yeah. Now, the first time Ted gave me a Peter Baggy comic, and Peter Baggy comes from that school of Robert Crumb type stuff, eh? And I remember looking at this art going, I can't read this. I hate it. I can't read it. But when I started actually getting to know his characters, getting to know his sense of humor, understanding how involved and three-dimensional his characters were, the art started to actually become very beautiful to me. And, I mean, Peter Baggy's art's not for everybody, but I have a true appreciation for what it is. Sometimes just when you start to see different elements in a write, because Baggy writes and draws his own books, like, I don't know. I guess after a while, I kind of love, like, maybe I don't like somebody's art style, but I come to love it at the same time. I can't think of any artist that... Oh, wait. Who's that guy who draws everybody super friggin' muscular? I can't think. And they have, like, the small heads and the big muscles and...
Rob Liefeld.
Yeah, that's it. Rob Liefeld. I hate Rob Liefeld's art.
You know who I don't like?
Yeah, I'd love to know.
Doug Mankey.
Who's that?
He did
Green Lantern a few years ago.
He also did the JLA series for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got some Mankey art from JLA. He's got a very...
I just don't like his faces.
Yeah, he's got a
very... many lines on them.
Very mannish look to his female characters. He's still drawing.
Okay, now I don't know him.
He's more recent. I'll show you an image of him.
Yeah, man. Let's talk about...
Well, let's go back to the Kickstarters that
diverted from. Sure. Sorry about
that. So another Kickstarter that we got turned on to is called King of Camp. Do you think we can try playing the video for King of Camp on here? Do you think that'll work?
Probably.
Let's see what happens here. Hold on.
It's time for King of Camp. Okay, so for those of you who don't know me, my name is Dennis Hart. For the past 10 years, I've been a caricature artist. last year, I had the chance to work a guest strip on an online comic, and it kind of refueled my desire to draw comic books and come up with my own stories. So a few months ago, I decided to go ahead with a project idea I had called Better Each Day, this guy here, which has two issues, and I'm working on the third. And today I'm here to talk to you about King of Camp, my latest project. Okay, so what is this about? This is about Jeffrey King, a former camp counselor who died while at the camp working. And he died under mysterious circumstances. So after his death, he makes this deal with this dark force that he can come back and take revenge on all the people who wronged him. The only problem is Jeffrey has been doing this for decades and he's just really over it. He just doesn't seem to care anymore. In fact, he's so in a slump that he may lose the only thing he actually does care about, and that is his home. Okay, so here's where you come in. This first issue is completed. 22 pages of story, 32 pages total. All I need is money to print this thing, to get it out to you, to ship it. So you might be wondering, if this thing is all completed, why am I putting it on Kickstarter?
If you've already done it, then why are you doing it on Kickstarter?
Well, I'm poor. How come there aren't a lot of rewards? I haven't really done this before, and I didn't want things to get out of hand and not be able to fulfill orders properly. So what I need from you is just the funds to print it. Let's get this comic book going. I would love to keep doing more and more issues of this in the future. If you guys think it's as funny as I do, then I'm sure we can make that happen.
There you go. So that's King of Camp's intro video for his Kickstarter. The art looks very hilarious and funny. I thought for a minute there it was going to be like a kids appropriate comic, but no.
Me too.
Right, splashed on the cover. Parental advisory, explicit content.
Because like it's got kind of like a really cartoony look, sort of, you know?
Exactly. So this is basically a Jason who is bored. I mean, it's just a hilarious concept. Andrew Thomas turned me on to this one.
Yeah.
So that looks like it'll be a lot of fun. His goal is ridiculous. I mean, this is crazy. Let me scroll down up here so I can get the exact number. It is $375.
That's sweet. All he wants?
That's what he wants. $375. He just wants printing costs.
My God. And how much does he have so far?
He's got $1,243.
So he made it.
24 days, pledged, funded. It's a goal for sure. Like you said, the comic's already done. You just need some printing costs and ship it out.
That's fantastic. Congratulations.
But, you know, we've kind of run into a few Kickstarters where it's almost like they put the bar too high and made it unachievable. Mm-hmm. Like Williams North Shield, his first one, I didn't think it was too high, but obviously it was higher than he could get bids for. But $375, that's all this guy wanted.
That's great. So he not only pledged his book, but he can go out for dinner.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's
so
good.
I mean, like, he's got some extra cash.
Buy yourself a steak,
cash.
My friend. In fact, I'm going to pledge enough money when I get home so you can have a steak dinner.
There you go. I mean, there's some...
Just for you, though. You can't bring the wife.
He is right. There's not a heck of a lot of rewards. I mean, you get the physical copy of the book. You get some stickers, a commission if you want, physical copy, PDF copy. That's about it. He doesn't get all crazy with, like, 600 pinups and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, but his ask is low.
Yeah.
So it seems like a no-brainer. This looks like it'll be a lot of fun. The only thing that I have an issue with these kind of Kickstarters is you're going to get the issue, you're going to love it, and you're going to wish there was more, and you're going to have to wait and wait.
But it did say it was like a 22-page story, too.
Yeah, so it's going to be a full comic.
So, you know.
Like, I want my Captain Canuck every month.
I know.
Where is he from?
I know.
That's a good question. I have no idea. I know he's not Canadian. So, you know, usually we're all the
same. He loses
Canadian
points
comics,
for that. I think
Canadian
it said comics. Tennessee further up.
Yeah, Tennessee. But he seems like a nice guy. Knoxville, Tennessee. It seemed like a genuine. What you didn't see is when he was doing that, he was spinning around in his chair in his studio being ridiculous. So he's got a great sense of humor.
Yeah.
So I think that'll be hilarious.
That's great.
So we're going to fund
that. Yeah, I think I'm going to. Yeah, I'm all over that. That looks like great.
Now, the other final Kickstarter I wanted to point out today is Paul Cooperberg. Right? We know Paul from doing comics forever and a day. Him and the guys that are kind of semi-rebooting some Charlton Comics properties.
Yeah.
Charlton Neo. He's got a comic book that he did called Secret Romances #1. And I've already got it. It was, you know, it's a take on the romance comics with some goofy parts in it. This time, he's doing Secret Romance number 2.
Okay.
And in addition to this, he's doing, get this, ready?
I'm ready.
Super Gorillas. Secret Romances and Super Gorillas. Oh, so you can pledge in here and you can get the original Super Secret Romance 1, you can get Secret Romance 2, or you can get Super Gorillas versus the All-American Victory League.
That's great. You know who used to love Super Gorillas? With Julius Schwartz.
Exactly. Julius... The DC Comics fascination with gorillas is off the hook.
Julius Schwartz, I saw an interview with him one time, and he had like different, or I don't know, I think it was on that old, what was that one Commander Rick used to do? Prisoners of Gravity.
Yep, Prisoners of Gravity.
And they had Julius Schwartz on it, and he had all these different things where he said if we didn't have a cover, that there was little things I would do. You know, he could make covers where they didn't have a cover, so he could do like a book. And he was like, the biggest thing, put a gorilla on it.
Yeah, exactly.
You put a gorilla on it, it's going to sell.
There's something weird about DC Comics and gorillas. So this is...
Yeah, well, it's because Julius Schwartz had a theory that if you put a gorilla on it... But look at all... You got a Congorilla. You had Angel and the Ape. Detective Chimp.
Like, there's literally a green-skinned, like a green-haired gorilla with a swastika on his chest saying, the green gorilla condemns you to death.
What was the name of the...
The Simian Supreme Court finds you guilty.
What was the name of the giant gorilla that Superman used to fight?
Ultra Human.
No, not that one. The other one.
There was Grood as well.
No. Grodd. Grodd was Flash.
Yes.
Ultra Humanite was the white one.
Yeah.
But he didn't... Titano.
Oh, I don't remember Titano.
You remember Titano the gorilla? No, okay.
No, I don't remember Titano. But
he was like a King Kong type gorilla that Superman used to fight. Yeah,
but Grodd was hilarious. The whole secret village that they had in Africa full of
gorilla
these
city.
Sentient gorilla city that was just awesome. Yeah, but I mean, like, the Simian Supreme Court finds you guilty. How hilarious does this look like it's going to be? Super Gorillas versus All American Victory Legion.
Yeah.
Now all these neo Charlton comics. I don't know if you've gotten a few. I've gotten a splattering of them. The Charlton Arrow is a redo. They're just like anthologies, just like the old Charlton Bullseye used to be, with a bunch of different stories. And it's just hilarious. So I'm really looking forward to this
one. That's cool.
So that's the three Kickstarters that I kind of know about. I know there's a bunch coming within the next week or so.
Great.
That we'll chat about.
So yeah, let's keep number it three, up. Let's,
Aurora Man number one. Mm-hmm. So there's a bunch of our favorite guys are coming out with new
and of course next week Die Kitty Die number 2.
Die
number
Kitty
1
Die
is going to be
one.
Available. So PDF only.
So well, the problem is that if you didn't sign up for it, you're stuck and you have to wait until the hardcover gets released.
But yeah.
I'm still steamed about that a little bit.
Yeah. I didn't read anything this week cuz I didn't get to the comic store and I just finished reading all the stuff I was wondering if you guys want to know about what's going on with the TV situation on Luann.
Luann TV? What do you
mean TV? Well, what it is because remember, if you weren't listening last time we updated you on Luann, Bernice is in charge of the quad now.
Oh, I remember now. Actually.
And the TV has been stolen.
Yeah.
So, who stole the TV? Is it Pyro, the emo kid who Bernice has a crush on, or is it Luann's arch nemesis, Tiffany?
Now, is there an answer yet?
There is no answer.
Okay, because I was going to guess.
But shit is getting crazy. It is coming down, all right? Because we found out that over the holiday, Christmas break, guess where Pyro, who had nowhere to go, was staying?
No idea.
Tiffany's room.
There you go.
Ba-da-bum. And Tiffany and Pyro, even though cops have been, is like...
Who's Tiffany?
Tiffany is Luann's arch nemesis.
You didn't say that, did you?
I did say that.
You just said
a minute ago.
I think you didn't say her name, though. You just said her arch nemesis. We'll rewind the tape later and see.
It was Luann's arch... All right, so they're in cahoots.
Listen, you got to get this straight, because it's convoluted to begin with. If you start confusing us by missing stuff...
Okay,
I missed last week.
But I didn't talk about it last week.
Oh, okay.
So I'm giving you 2 weeks' update. So anyways...
Good, okay.
So Tiffany was... by the cops and the campus, I guess it was cops, it was campus security, was interrogated, and we figured out she had nothing to do with it, but she's like has exchanging text messages with Pyro, and then when Bernice went to go see what was going on, she found Pyro's bag in Tiffany's room. So something's going on. Tiffany and Pyro, something's going on there, and they still haven't found the TV, but do you want to know what's even more exciting?
Hmm.
That they just launched a second Luann website.
What do you mean a second?
A second one where you can read old Luann strips from 1989. I believe it's called, like, you can actually link it through there, but you can actually read when Luann was in high school, not in college, and that is now online as well. I can't remember what it's called, though. But
is that
now,
the same creator?
Same creator.
Oh, there you go.
It's from 1989, so they're running old Luann strips on a, on another site, so you can read her high school adventures or her college adventures.
So you can read Golden Age Luann
yep.
versus Silver Age Luann.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's great. So there's a lot of Luann going around, but anyways, stay tuned. Next, hopefully next week I'll know what's going on with Pyro and Tiffany, and maybe they'll find the TV. I'll let you guys know.
How about you, Dan? Did you head to the comic shop? Did you read anything this week?
I did not head to the comic shop, no.
There you go. I read two comics.
What'd you read?
Can I go on and on about these?
I want to know about them.
Okay, the first one is Planet of the Apes, Green Lantern.
I love the cover. Is it fun?
It is. Well, see, here's my problem. The story's been told.
Okay.
There's no surprises in it, you know? It's somebody finds a ring, somebody like they shouldn't have it, the Green Lantern Corps comes, and there's a bad guy. So from a team-up point of view, there's no surprises. It's okay. Your standard superhero team-up. But the fact that it's Planet of the Apes and Cornelius who finds the ring
oh, really?
Is a hoot and a half. And it takes place immediately after the first movie.
Okay.
So Cornelius is like, it opens up, there's this shrouded, cloaked figure, and he's killing a bunch of yellow lanterns, and then there's this burst of light, and this light bolt streaks through the universe. Turns out it not only streaks through the universe, streaks through time, and crashes into Planet of the Apes era Earth, which I can't remember what year Planet of the Apes was supposed to be. 2630, or am I thinking Buck Rogers? Anyways, so Cornelius is walking through the desert trying to find Taylor and Nova, stumbles across Nova. She, of course, is mute, and she points to this crater. He falls into the crater, pulls out a ring, and then she disappears. Not to be heard of again in the comic book. So I don't know if it's she's like a mirage, an image. So he's got this ring, and it turns out that this is the Universal Ring, which we know as the Phantom Ring in the current comic series. So it's basically a ring that has the properties of all the Green Lantern, Yellow Lantern, Red Lantern spectrum. So if you know your Green Lantern history, you know that there's more than one emotion, more than one color of ring. Well, this ring can do them all. So, of course, Cornelius slips it on. He gets angry. He's Red Lantern. He gets, what's yellow? Yellow's fear.
Yep.
He feels fear. He turns into Yellow Lantern. And, of course, then the Green Lantern Corps swoops in to save the day. And there's this amazing scene where Hal Jordan ends up, he gets caught in some kind of a time thing. I don't want to spoil it. Right? Yep. So there's, like, read the comic. But basically, he ends up on Planet of the Apes Earth with no costume, no power in his ring. So he's literally on the beach in front of the fallen Statue of Liberty, looking up going, oh, you damn dirty rings. So it's like a really good throwback, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The art, I think the art's fantastic.
I've seen some of the art online, and I really like it. I don't know if I like enough to buy it, but It's I'm a huge Apes yeah. fan though. Like it's after Doctor Who. It's probably my next favorite sci-fi franchise.
No, I got the first issue because there's a action figure variant.
Cool.
And immediately I went digging through my old Mego figures and some of my newer re-Mego figures, and I found a Green Lantern costume. Threw it on my Cornelius doll, so I've got like a Cornelius Green Lantern on my bookshelf. Then it came out for review on First Comics News I do reviews for. Mm-hmm. So I ended up reviewing it and reading the art and stuff. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping the comic shop has my copy for
me. What was the other book you read?
So that one was really cool. You guys should definitely tune into that one. I think it's a good series. The other one I read, Deathstroke number 11.
Yeah, that looks awesome.
Now, again, I did a review of this. So you can head to First Comics News. You can look it up. But basically, the idea here is that everybody's making a comic series for the trade paperback. So it's always a six-issue series.
Right.
And it's always hard for somebody to come in and just pick up one comic book and enjoy it. Now, there are some outstanding examples of that. That one Superman annual that Alan Moore drew, wrote, what do you get for the man that has everything?
Yep.
That was an excellent, like, if somebody wants to get into comics, you go, read this.
Right.
This is a good starting point. Well, this Deathstroke 11 is exactly that. It's a one-off. It's all about gun violence in Chicago. It's written by, I'm brain farting here. Who wrote it? Christopher Priest, of course.
Oh, cool.
James Owsley.
He's a great writer.
Right. So he's been doing the whole Deathstroke series. Mm-hmm. So he writes it, but Dennis Cowan pencils, and Bill Sienkiewicz does the art. So, you know, it's all that weird line, heavy line art and stuff.
But I think what excited me when I saw the cover, though, is that they've brought back one of my favorite, one of my absolute favorite DC characters who had one of the worst reboots in the New 52.
Now, I'll have to check because I'm not remembering the New 52 version. So, anyways, it's the Creeper.
It's the Creeper.
And the Creeper plays a massive part in this story. Like, the whole story is all about Jack Ryder, his alter ego, being investigating these gun crimes.
Wow.
So I did a little bit of research because I'm big on the old Bronze Age, Silver Age Creeper.
Love the Creeper.
I guess in 2006, they redid his origin a little bit.
Yes, they did. I have those.
Yeah. So basically, it used to be he was just a bit schizophrenic, and he would put on a costume and he'd fight crime. Mm-hmm. In the 2006 reboot, so to speak, it's like some kind of a nanotechnology stem cell virus that he gets injected with, and this is actually a secondary persona. It's kind of more like the Hulk type transformation. I don't know what happened in New 52.
Ugh, do you want to know?
Yeah, in a second, though.
Okay.
But in Rebirth, since this is his first one, it's right back to that 2006 version.
Cool.
So what happened in New 52?
They made him into a Japanese demon who possessed a sword, much like Katana's sword.
That's weird.
So he was a villain. He was a bad guy, and they just did one issue with him for that. What was that Villains Unleashed? Remember they did all those a month where they just did those.
Oh, yeah, with the fancy covers?
Yeah, they did those. So they did one for the Creeper, and I bought it because I'm a huge Creeper fan. So I'm like, oh, let's see what they do with him. And I don't even remember. I think it was a Suicide Squad thing. Where was Katana in the Suicide Squad in the New 52?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was a Katana thing. And so she battles him because he tries to possess her sword, and he was a Japanese demon, and he was a bad guy, and he was a killer, and Jack Ryder wasn't in any, like, it had nothing to do with, and it was so terrible. And I'm glad they've just decided to scrap that and go back to Jack Ryder. I mean, you know, I have the first issue of the Creeper's solo book, but a number of years ago I was at Fan Expo, and I almost bought the first appearance of the Creeper, but the guy who sold it to me was really nice, and he actually said, you know, I want you to know there's 4 pages missing from this book. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, and then I didn't buy it, but I was really glad. The Creeper was, he was originally designed by Steve Ditko.
Yep.
Yeah.
That was a Steve Ditko character. And I first discovered there was a Creeper backup story in the old Barry Allen Flash books.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that's where I first saw the character. I thought he was just so weird looking. I've just always had a love. And one thing that I really regret not buying, I remember for the longest time there was a Creeper action figure at Jeff's Comics and Cards, or whatever that was called there on
Grey Guardian.
Before Grey Guardian.
Yeah, Jeff's Comics.
And I always was going to go buy it, and I never did. And then finally, when they were just selling everything off really cheap, the Creeper was gone.
I did
get Blue Devil, because I always was going to buy the Blue Devil and the Creeper figures, but I regret not buying that. Whoever bought that, wow, you're lucky, because I always wanted it.
Oh, I'm sure we can find them.
Oh, sure we could.
Now, the New 52, that was it? Just that one issue?
It was just that one issue. I think it was the Suicide Squad issue of it, yeah.
Because I remember reading,
they never went back to it. It was terrible.
I remember reading his original series from the 60s. And he had an appearance in Brave and the Bold a couple of times. And then he was in that DC Comics Presents with Superman.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I didn't read the Barry Allen Flash.
He did a Justice League appearance where...
Well, he was in the Bwahaha Justice League a little bit.
A little bit, but he did one issue of the classic Silver Age Justice League, I think, around the time he was created.
There you go.
I have that issue with him in the Justice League. And then Vertigo did a miniseries a number of years ago that was really interesting. It took place in 1920s Paris, where there was a female Creeper, and they actually made it as she was actually a Creeper. She was the Creeper before Jack Ryder was, and it was a really interesting take on it, like take place in 20s Paris. I really like that, but And then there was that miniseries. It was, I think it was called Creeper Rebirth, or not Rebirth, but it was. Remember when they did like a Green Arrow series and they did a Black Lightning series where they kind of reinvented all the characters in 6-part miniseries?
No.
Okay, well, they did a series of miniseries maybe about 10, 15 years ago where.
Yeah, that would be 2006.
Yeah. And there was a Creeper one. And that's when they kind of they did Metal Men, Green Arrow. I think it was called Year One, Creeper Year One, Black
something like that.
Lightning Year One, and that's when they redid the Creeper. I have those. They're good. I've always liked the character. I'm hoping I can buy that. I'm hoping to get a copy of that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I should call Alex tomorrow and see if he'll put one in my bag.
It's a done in one story, which is nice, right? So it was a pretty wicked.
I'm just glad to see he's coming. Creeper was on Batman, the Batman TV series.
Adventures of Batman.
Yeah, the Paul Dini series.
Was he in the dark one, or was he? I know he was in the Justice League Action.
I think he was in, because I've never seen that episode, but they always make Creeper action figures in the. Who was the artist? Tim Sale.
Bruce Timm.
Bruce Timm. Yeah, there is a Bruce Timm Creeper. So I think, I think Paul Dini wrote him into a few episodes of that. So, character I've always loved.
So we got a couple of minutes there. Mm-hmm. Anybody, you want to talk about what you got in your hand?
I am so excited about this. Marty got me a copy of Jason's Quest number 88.
Well, it's Showcase 88.
Showcase 88. It's the first Jason Quest book. Jason's Quest was it's one of the most unpopular stories ever in the history of Showcase. And I remember as a kid seeing the splash page for it and just thinking it looks so great. And here it is. It's Showcase presents the unusual story of a boy, his bike, his search, Jason's quest. And of course, Jason's on the bike and he goes, who is she? Where is she? And it has this picture of all these women. And I remember thinking that looks so groovy. And I have the first two, I have the second and third issue, but I've never had the first one. But it's a story that was so unpopular, they just dropped it and never finished it.
Yeah, exactly. I think they finished it in like one of those canceled comic cavalcades.
No, I don't think so. I don't think it even appeared in that. They just never did. And that's why I have a theory that they will finish up in the current Wonder Woman book that I'm not reading at all.
There you go. All right. I guess that's it for this week on that big, huge, massive bombshell. I guess we'll see you guys next Friday.
I will be here. Unless I'm not.
Unless you're not. All right, kids. Have fun.
You have been listening to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio on 92.7 CFFF FM in Peterborough, Ontario, and available as a downloadable podcast at www.heykidscomics.ca and at www.firstcomicsnews.com. Promotional consideration for the show was provided by no one. Are you kidding me? We couldn't get advertisers if we tried. Wardrobe for our hosts was provided by Joe Nerds in Whitby, Ontario. They don't know that fact, but that is where we get 90% of our clothes from. No animals were harmed in the making of this radio show. Marty tried, but allergies won't let him get too close to Sam's cats. The views and opinions expressed by Sam are solely his own and do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the rest of the hosts, as we all like the Walking Dead TV show. The Hey Kids Comics Radio Show is a Quinn Martin production and copyright Hey Kids Comico. Rebroadcasting in part or in whole of this show is forbidden, but really, who would want to anyway?